Because you can't win the game because you think about the game, and that's losing the game. We just lost the game.
Right.
Everyone listening and watching,
I'm triggered.
You just lost the game.
Yeah.
We all lost the game. Sorry.
Gosh, I really hope there's people who have no idea what we're talking about, because that means they weren't traumatized at, like, middle school.
And well, now they've... Wow! Well, then that's crazy, because they've gone a really long time without losing the game, and now I just made all of them lose the game.
Recording from New York and Los Angeles, your hosts, Nicole Katz and Brianna Klein, are lined up on the grid for this week's Grid Walk. Engines are fired up, ready to broadcast to you every Thursday on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, and more. Subscribe, like the video, turn on auto downloads, and leave a review to provide us with a fresh set of tires. Today, Grid Walk will take pit stops at...
Well, Max Verstappen didn't win a race. Whoa, I didn't know that was allowed anymore.
It happens sometimes.
It happens. And we actually don't talk about Red Bull really at all in that context for this entire episode.
Yeah, it's not the important thing here, but Ferrari, on the other hand.
Well, first, we start out the episode with an update on everything going on with Christian Horner's sexual harassment case, the FIA not holding themselves accountable, Susie Wolff attempting to hold the FIA accountable, and Lewis Hamilton being the absolute king he is. Like always, our time codes are always in the description. Feel free, if that's triggering to you in any way, to skip ahead. We will not be offended. Protect your own mental health and sanity. Then we have to play an all-important game of red flag, where we determine, what does Ferrari have to do for us to believe that Ferrari is for real, that they're actually going to compete with Red Bull, and not just be the top of the non-Max Verstappen category of Formula One. Are they for real? Do you think they're for real? We're gonna play a game. We're gonna find out. Then we have a very different PR safety car to get to that has nothing to do with the clear PR nightmare that we've been starting all of our shows with, and that is courtesy of Williams, who only ran one car this week and decided to take a car from one driver and give it to another. They also give you some fun tidbits about how apparently they built their car in Excel, which just brings me so much joy. So we're gonna get everything to do with that. Next, McLaren. What I wrote on our outline, a mouthful for myself here, but McLaren's marketing machine's big win. And that's because Lando Norris was on Chicken Shop Date. And whether or not you know what that is, we're going to tell you why that's a big deal and why it's such a big win for McLaren's always impressive marketing and PR machine. Lastly, we head back into the wild to discuss everything to do with Alonso's penalty and George Russell's crash. Hey, teaser? We're both still a little confused because the FIA did not make the wording very clear. So was it a brake check? We will discuss. We're also going to discuss who we believe in the Alonso versus FIA chaos here. And last but not least, the Yellow Sector notes are back this week. So stay tuned for the end for those. And with that, take it away, voiceover man.
It's lights out and away we go on this week's Grid Walk.
Fourth week in a row, starting the episode on a sour note, but that's not our fault.
Not our fault. Susie Wolff says some great words. It's unfortunate that she has to say words, but...
So, my gosh, yeah.
We got a lovely statement. When I say lovely, I just mean that Susie Wolff is just being strong and confident and standing up for herself. From Susie... it was like the day our episode came out. It was last week.
Yeah.
She confirmed about filing a criminal complaint in the French courts back in March against the FIA, almost starting an entire investigation against her based on absolutely nothing. There's been no continued transparency about what was happening with the process. And I, you know, she wrapped up her statement with, I feel more than ever it is important to stand up, call out improper behavior, and make sure people are held accountable. While some may think silence absolves them from responsibility, it does not. Obviously, Susie's speaking to more than just like her situation right now that she's going through and kind of the overall state of the sport with everything that's recently gone on with Christian Horner at Red Bull. females in motorsports, female fans in motorsports, what happened with Susie and the FIA in December. It's like one thing after another. So her speaking out and vocalizing that she's filed an official complaint, like, shows that she's not, you know, backing down on different things and just letting things slide and following through on her word that she wants to see consequences be held up for these types of things. So it was a really important time for a statement like this to come out from her.
Yeah. And I don't know that I should have looked up the exact timeline, because I don't know at the time of recording last week if what I'm about to say we've already touched upon, but it came, her statement that she has filed this criminal complaint against the FIA, it came almost immediately after the FIA's internal FIA investigation absolved the FIA of knowing about the complaints that were submitted to the FIA's hotline that are supposed to keep people safe. The reason there's these anonymous tip hotlines in any place is so people can anonymously submit complaints and tips when there are bad things happening in their workplace. And it could be any bad thing. It doesn't just have to be like sexual harassment against women. It's like, that's why there's this tip and this hotline. So it felt, not only is it strong because good for Susie for standing up for herself, but the timing of, yeah, you know what? I am going to come out and I am going to confirm that this is happening, because she could have let it be a rumor right when Red Bull is trying to be as silent as possible. And that final sentence that I'm going to ask you to read again in a moment, that is pointed at every single person in sport right now. It's pointed at every other team boss that is like, well, maybe if we're all really quiet, then, like, no, people will stop looking to us to hold Red Bull and Christian Horner accountable. Red Bull right now is like, well, if we're really, really quiet, maybe people will stop calling for Christian Horner to be ousted for doing bad things. And the FIA is like, well, maybe if we're really, really loud about the fact that we don't know anything, that everyone will just believe our word for it, which is just, above all else, the FIA just has a horrible PR strategy. Or not above, like, aside from everything, the FIA just has a, thank you. Sorry, bad phrase. So could you read Susie's final statement one more time?
Yeah, so it wraps up with, while some may think silence absolves them from responsibility, it does not. Right. So it's kind, you know, remaining silent in different issues. More often than not, just make you complacent in a problem. So this is why, again, you know, us acknowledging these issues going on in F1 as fans in F1 is, I think, us doing our responsibility to people with the platform, as we've discussed previously, that, you know, we're still going to acknowledge this because we believe, you know, silence is contributing to just, like, ignoring it and making it worse. So bringing attention to it, giving the platform, shedding light on it. No silence here.
Nope. And then, of course, the only person who wasn't silent in their support of Susie Wolf this week was Lewis Hamilton. And I have some of his quotes here that he gave. And I think Lewis just always gives such good quotes. It's like, I feel like we could do an entire podcast breaking down what makes his quotes so great. But I'm going to read this here. In totality, he goes, firstly, I'm incredibly proud of Susie. She's so brave. She stands for such great values. She's such a leader. Preach. All right. Paragraph 2. In a world where often people are silenced, for her to be standing up sends such a great message. I love that she's taking it out of this world, filing it from outside, because there's a real lack of accountability here within this sport, within the FIA. Things are happening behind closed doors. There's no transparency. There's clearly no accountability. How can you trust the sport and what is happening here if you didn't have that? And I love that Lewis, with most of his quotes, he just calls a spade a spade. There's nothing controversial in here. This is what we all, like, there's a lack of accountability because no one's holding the FIA accountable. No one's holding Horner accountable. No one, and this has been happening for years, and everything from when Lewis lost his championship to you and I are doing an entire segment this week about how we don't know what to believe from the Fernando Alonso penalty this week because we just don't trust the sport to litigate itself anymore. So I agree with Lewis's sentiment that I think it is so incredibly important that Susie Wolf is going outside of the F1 bubble to create that sense of accountability that needs to be have here. Because the FIA refusing to look into tips on their tip hotline, refusing to look into Christian Horner when we know there are oodles of evidence against him. But like, yeah, sure, we're going to open up a massive investigation because some bigot prick wrote something on the internet about Susie Wolf. Like,
make it make sense. Yeah, make it make sense.
And then I will say that a couple other quotes that were not directly in that paragraph that Lewis gave this week, where Lewis just showed up and decided, I'm done. Because he said, we're living in a time where the message is, if you file a complaint, you will be fired. Because, and this is what I think we've been trying to communicate for weeks about why this makes us so upset. It's that not holding Christian Horner accountable and then firing the woman who made the complaint. That is what it's saying. It is saying that this sport is not safe for women in any capacity. And then all the silence is making everyone complicit around deciding that that is what the message is. And so again, I liked that Lewis called a spade, and he is still the biggest, most important voice in this sport. And I will always thank him for saying that.
Thank goodness, because it'd be a very silent grid without him.
And then the last thing is someone directly asked him if he has any faith in the leadership coming from MBS at the FIA, and or like that it did he lose faith in him because of this? And Lewis essentially said that he never had any faith in him to begin with.
It was never there.
So like, Lewis, like this is why. Yeah. This is why this sport needs Lewis. It needs more Lewises. And this is why I'm so worried for the future of the sport, because Lewis will eventually retire. Like, I'm glad that that's been put off now because of his contract with Ferrari. I think he really would have retired at the end of next year if this didn't happen. But I need the rest of the sport to step up. It can't just be I go into another race weekend and Lewis Hamilton says another thing that's the right thing that makes me feel safe and seen. And the rest of the sport is just like, we don't care about women. Like, that is not an okay place for us to be as a sport.
And maybe individuals and governing bodies being held accountable for when they don't do things right would then also cause other people on the grid to be like, huh, maybe this is bad. Just wake up. Everyone needs to just kind of snap out of it.
It's one of those things that makes me reflect on the fact that, like, we are obviously not in the F1 traveling circus, right? So we're on the outside. We're looking on the inside. I feel like it's one of those things where if I went up to a random mechanic, maybe 9 out of 10 times, I was like, what's your feeling on this? Their feelings would probably be similar to our feelings. Or they would say something like, yeah, it's really important to me that my female colleagues feel safe. Like, I think most people in F1 feel that way, but I think they're also insulated in this bubble where they feel like they don't have any power or control over it, which is why I think it's so important that Susie Wolf is going outside of the bubble to start to hold people accountable. Because when you're in, like, F1 is a pretty tight-knit, small working space. I think threats work when you work with such
everyone
a small
group. Everyone knows everyone. Everyone worked, were previous co-workers somewhere, and exactly. You need to go outside of it for it to be a fair and transparent process.
And when things are that tight knit, all it takes is that one colleague to say something that makes you feel unsafe, where it's like, oh, can I talk to anyone I work with? Mm-hmm. Now I don't feel safe, right? Like, so it just, this is a reminder, no matter where you work or who you work with, that like, silence makes you complicit. Like, stand up, be a support, stand up for people who can't stand up for themselves, be a support person for people in your workspace who might not have the innate power that you might have or not. Like, it's, oh, I don't know.
It shouldn't be hard, yet for some reason it is hard.
It is hard. It's, but doing the right thing is often hard, right? Like, but you'll feel better in the long run. You won't have to go home to your wife and explain to them why all your female colleagues hate you. Oh, we're going to miss Lewis, and shout out to Susie. And F1, we are on day
a million.
Probably 1,765,000 of us waiting for you to hold yourself accountable.
Like, the disdain I have for the Rangers is so strong. I, like, legitimately more than I hate Florida State. And we know how much I hate Florida State. Like, the Rangers are my mortal enemy number one. I blame them for so much of the pain in my life.
So, like, the way I hate the Cowboys.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Or the Celtics.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Hate the Rangers.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get it. I hate the Rangers. But, like, I don't know. You got to root for your team to make the playoffs. Like, you shouldn't be rooting for the Flyers in this game I'm watching right now.
I can never. Like, right. But, like, I just.
All right. We're bringing back a game here. Because Ferrari had an interesting weekend where they had a 1-2. They won a race.
They won a race? Yeah. Appendix. That was too many. That was a mouthful.
you got it out. You made it through. Basically, a F1 race without Max Verstappen's participation was an enjoyable race to watch. Like, whoa.
Wow. Who would have thought? Yeah, when I was a couple of minutes behind you, and I was the first like, oh, wow, look at Carlos go. And I'm just, and then there's like, this can't be why Brianna texted me. And then it happened. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Because for context, the race started at 9 p.m. my time, so a totally normal time for me to watch it. But that means it was midnight in a cold time. So I texted her, are you watching this right now? As soon as I saw the DNF. And she was like, yeah, but I'm behind. And I was like, all right, text me when the thing happens. And she thought the thing was science, like, passing Max that first time it happened, when we didn't realize that Max's car was injured. Yeah. And she texted back, like, it happened! And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was, like, seconds away from blowing it to you via text. And you were like, Carlos passed him. And I was like, okay, I'll wait. I'll just sit here and wait.
And then about, like, a lap and a half, two laps later, I was like, oh, wait, no, this is...
Right.
This is the moment. I was like, wow, this is crazy. Right at the start, like, no, wow, yeah, that definitely worth the text.
But it took about 20 laps of Max Verstappen free racing for the commentators, everyone on my social media feed, to start to convince themselves that Ferrari might be for real and that they might actually be competitive because look how much faster than Perez they are and all this stuff. So while I don't believe that is true at this point, Nicole, do you believe that Ferrari, at this point, with what they've seen, is a true competitor to Max Verstappen and Red Bull right now?
Not 100%. I'm not fully sold. Right.
So because we're both in that place, I thought we could bring back Red Flag. I have a list of things that could happen over the next amount of time going forward in the F1 world. And I would like you to tell me, Nicole, at what point are you going to believe that Ferrari is for real? So all of these things stack up. If one of these events happens and Nicole doesn't believe yet that Ferrari is for real, a competitor with Max Verstappen, she's going to play this sound.
Push the slap.
We're going to push on. Keep pushing forward on those tires. If she finally hits a breaking point where, okay, if all of this stuff happened, I will believe that Ferrari is for real. She will finally.
All right, box, box.
The delay there was great. And the red flag will fly, and it will be a time.
Ferrari for, like, real.
Ferrari for real.
I didn't stutter.
And I didn't. I don't have words. This is so hard for me to believe, not because I don't think Ferrari can do it, but because I think Max Verstappen and Red Bull is so far ahead, personally, that I think it's going to take so much to get to a point where I believe this could happen.
Yeah.
But we're going to run through it all. So,
how many things we're just going?
Could go until the content's boring here.
Wow, you really went for it here. Okay.
Yes. So I'm going to set some foundational things here. Foundational thing number one is that Charles Leclerc is currently only 4 points behind Max Verstappen in the standings. If they swapped the car, Charles Leclerc would be P1 in the championship right now. If Carlos Sainz theoretically started last race, he could be P1 in the championship because he's only 11 points behind Max Verstappen right now. On the constructor side, Ferrari is currently only 4 points behind Red Bull. Okay? So, I do understand that if anyone wants to live in a Delulu land that we just haven't gotten to, this is basically how far into this do we need to get to be in that Delulu land. But the raw numbers are close. But, okay. Ready. You ready for this?
As ready as I'll ever be.
All right. The first thing that happens, we get to Japan, we get through the first three free practices, and Ferrari is faster on race sims and on quali sims for the whole set of practices for the Japan GP weekend.
Push the slap.
Yeah, I didn't think that was going to get you. Would it get you even a little excited going into the week? Yeah.
No, it would just make me think that there's some sort of technical issue at Red Bull, that there's something wrong.
Like they're sandbagging!
Like, there's sandbagging happening. There's no way that Ferrari has this figured out. Or if there was some kind of, like, magical thing that they did figure out, everything would blow up on race day.
And it's just practice.
Yeah.
All right. One of the two Ferraris gets pole.
Push the slap.
Okay. That can happen.
That happened a lot last year,
too. Yeah. Like, Saturdays can give us, you know, Ferrari hope to then cry on Sunday.
Yep. All right. The Grand Prix comes for the Japanese GP. And Ferrari is close to the Red Bulls. So much so that they're in Max Verstappen's pit stop window during the race.
Push the slap.
I want to see what happens.
I'm just... They lose the race, but they were in the pit stop window. Are they for real? Right.
Oh, yeah. No, just meaning like, okay, yeah. No, we're going to keep pushing. This is...
You still don't interested. Believe they're real.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't either. What if I say they were in Max Verstappen's pit window, but like destroyed Sergio Perez?
Push the slap.
Yeah, I didn't think that would change anything. All right.
Absolutely zero.
So the next three races is we have the Japanese GP, then we have the Chinese GP, and then we have the Miami GP. If Ferrari manages to win at least one of those three races, would you think Ferrari's for real? No other context.
No, that's not fair. That's important. There's important context called Max Verstappen's participation.
No other context.
That's not fair. This is...
Okay.
No, Max participated.
No.
Okay.
I feel like I cheated that I got that context out. So that's going to be my answer without context anyway. I'm still... Right. Could be a freak act. Max has the flu. He has appendicitis. It could be things.
Red Bull gets it wrong one weekend. That is possible. I know it's hard to believe, but it is possible. Okay, so you wouldn't believe that they are for real a competitor if they won one of the next three races.
No.
What if they win two of the next four? Would you start? So at that point, okay, so if they win two of the next four, that would mean on the season they've won three of the seven races. I'm sure in this scenario, Sergio Perez is not looking any faster. So it's kind of Max on his own against the Ferraris. So they're keeping up in the Constructors' Championship. Would you believe they're for real?
I almost feel silly to say no, but it could be like I'm starting to consider to believe that maybe it could possibly maybe be real.
Push the slap.
So I'm still pushing.
All right, so at that point, we're going on to round 8. They're at Monaco. So everything has happened. Ferrari's won 3 of the 7 races.
I'm so scared of what happens at Monaco. Like, this is the most terrifying thing that ever happens. This is where I have the most anxiety. Like,
I can't predict anything, but we're playing a game. here. And let's just say Ferrari has a good Monaco. There's no disasters. Charles finishes on the podium. Max wins, but Charles finishes on the podium.
Push the slap.
You still don't believe that they're for real at that point? They,
I don't know.
Charles, I just said Charles Leclerc had a good Monaco GP.
So, yes, Max Verstappen could win Monaco, and Charles Leclerc could be on the podium, and I still wouldn't fully believe that they're back, which might sound insane. However, if he won Monaco, I think I would have boxed and ended the game, and we would have never played red flags ever again.
No, I think the reality for me, because I'm kind of out of things. Like, I'm just going to go, like, what if they win Canada next? And, like, this is no longer good content.
So but I finally think, pushed it all the way to the yes, end. Of just like, so maybe end. I just don't believe in Ferrari. And the key is they just need Lewis Hamilton in 2025. And then I'll believe it.
Yeah, I agree with the general sentiment that Ferrari is going to have to do a lot and a lot with Max Verstappen on the racetrack for me to believe that they are an actual competitor this year, to like fully buy into it. That being said, if they win two of the next four races and we're on round seven and they've won three of the seven races and Max was actually in some of those that they won, like, I'm going to believe at that point, like, I'm going to be DeLulu enough to believe that it's real. I'm surprised that you went that far. I just said Ferrari had a good Monaco for Charles Leclerc, and you were like, still wouldn't believe it.
No, I need Charles to win Monaco, or else I just won't believe it, because that's the dream coming true.
He's never even been on the podium.
Exactly. It's not enough.
I don't know. Break the curse for real.
I would love to break the curse. I apologize for my pessimistic viewpoint of this, everyone, but I just need to see more. I need to see this following through with Max on track, which I don't think that's a hot take. I think everyone kind of feels that way. I mean, we've between Singapore and Australia, like, it was exciting and Carlos wins and Max DNFs, like that is a very huge piece here. So
someone had to win this weekend. I selfishly am glad that it was a Ferrari. We get this good story out of it. But yeah, nothing that happened this weekend made me believe that, like, they're Red Bull's true competitors. Also, because since we've found out that they just, like, put a piece on the Red Bull wrong, that's the formal explanation to why. So, I don't know. Like, none of this reads like, yeah, that Ferrari pink's really caught up. But they do look like the only real contender on the track. So, hopefully,
yeah.
Maybe
they could. You know what? If they win, you know, two more races, maybe now I'll just catch me backtracking and be like, I didn't know anything. I never believed that it could happen, but they proved me wrong. And that will make a great clip for our social media.
You did the content thing so well that I ran out of things to do the content thing with. You know what? They got a point. They just lost, but they got the point. I'm okay. Sorry.
So overtime, and then they lost?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'll take it.
Nicole and Brianna, a safety car has been deployed. Please speed up to reach the PR nightmare that has occurred.
I do think Williams' weekend was a little...
Yeah, and people were mad. People were very mad on behalf of Logan, and I understand, but also, like, Alex.
I'm mad at Williams, because if you think so low of your second driver that you would rather create the PR stink bomb that is taking his car away and giving it to the driver who crashed, why are you employing him? Like, yeah, we're not dealing with a Lewis Hamilton and a rookie deal. Like, if you had a second competent driver that you believed in, like, why does Logan have a job if you would rather Alex be driving?
Yeah, and this, I think, you know, if they need to see Logan showing his potential, an opportunity where, like, he is the driver of the team and could have, like, you know, whatever support there that weekend kind of would be the moment. It sends a really horrible message, like, publicly. And I think just within the grid of, like, yeah, Alex crashed, but we're still going to have him driving and just not drive his car. Like, I would also be very, very upset if I was Logan.
Yeah. No, and I think Logan has every right to be upset. I just think that of all the decisions to be mad at Williams for, like, what happened where someone else didn't get put in that car? Like, yeah. There seemed to be other options, and they decided to stick with Logan. How can you stick with the driver that you believe in that little?
That you don't want. It's again, sends that, like, really scary message of, like, so then, like, what is it that you see in him? That if you don't, you know, want him to be your sole representation for that whole weekend, what was your goal of keeping him on this time?
And while I do... Okay, wait, I realized that we just dove right into emotions and feelings. In case you missed it this weekend, Williams only ran one car. And it's because Alex Albon crashed out in a free practice in a really scary crash, and it damaged the chassis. And Williams doesn't have a third car. And so that means they could only run one car this weekend. So they said, okay, Logan, we understand that your car is fine and Alex's is the one that's broken, but Alex gives us the best chance for points, so we're going to run Alex. And the PR nightmare around that, where I think everyone just likes to latch on to someone that they feel like was done wrong. Like, so Alex was the one who made the mistake. Logan didn't make a mistake. His car was fine. He didn't crash. But Logan doesn't get to drive, so I get why people were upset. Created this whole PR nightmare. Now everyone's caught up in case we just dropped you in the middle of our conversation with zero context.
Well, yeah. Context is important. Then my brain just paused. It is... part of my brain is wondering if maybe Williams was so concerned about their last, like, chassis that they had, that they thought, which is crazy to say this, given that Alex was the one to have gotten in crash in first place. In the race, which driver is more likely to have us leaving with said chassis so that we're not, like, completely unbelievably screwed in races moving forward?
Yeah, and I think they made the right choice based on everything we've seen from their driver pairing. But this is also coming from someone who didn't believe that Logan should have come back for the second year based on what we saw from his first year. And I don't look at Williams as a team that didn't give their second driver opportunities like some of the other teams on the grid. Like, I felt like Logan had every opportunity to improve throughout his rookie year, and he didn't really show signs of improvement. But Williams still signed him again. Like, there's a lot of people at fault for what happened. I don't think any of them are Alex Albon. I mean, a little bit, because he crashed. But, like, of the people on my hierarchy to be mad at, I'm still, like, I'm mad at Williams for even in bringing back Logan if they don't believe in him. And I'm mad at Williams for being such a poorly run organization for the last 12 years that James Vowles still is trying to just, like, get a third car to the track, like a emergency replacement chassis for the car.
Yeah, he had to do, like, another emotional video post explaining the situation of what happened. I felt like I was in, like, a situation room of, like, this is the deal. This is what's happening. Here are the details. Here is our plan. And I'm just right. Like,
I've been telling you we're really behind as an organization. Now you guys get to see it play out where we're running one car. And I did think, like, unfortunately, Alex didn't get points. And the Williams hasn't looked good all year. But I did think Alex seemed to maximize what he could out of the car this weekend, which is more than I think we've been able to say about Logan for the last year.
Yeah.
So it's...
like, why sign again? It was a surprise when it happened. It was late and weird, and the timing was strange. It seemed like they were waiting until, like, the last final second to see who was going to be available. And then they were just like, oops. Let's look at pictures with James and Logan and stick to it again this year. Or
I forgot that how weird that was.
Yeah.
Okay, this is giving me an opportunity to bring up something that we learned a couple weeks ago, but we haven't had an opportunity to talk about on the podcast. They don't have a software that catalogs all the parts for building their car, and they use Microsoft Excel. And I am of two minds for this. So one mind, I'm like, wow, yeah, no wonder they don't have a third chassis ready to go. They're using Excel. And then my other mind is the mind that just is like, yeah, Excel is a magical program. And I just love the idea that one of the cars on the grid that isn't even the slowest car on the grid was built using Excel.
I love Excel. I would not be on this earth without it. You and I know the consequences of working on spreadsheets that are way too big and the cost that is to your mental health. So I just can't. There is
There's some poor person.
There is, and it's going to be like that really knows the ins and outs of the spreadsheet. Like there is, and then there's your adjacent appendages. That is a terrifying accident waiting to happen. Oh my goodness. Someone's going to leave a laptop somewhere and it's just like, but right. That's like my own trauma that I'm repressing of giant Excel spreadsheets.
I hope they have it backed up to a cloud somewhere.
Exactly. Panics of all panics of things that I have lived through. That baffles me. I cannot understand this. File that also under how does F1 not have a standard professional trained safety crew? How is Williams keeping track of these types of things in an Excel spreadsheet of a device and software that you can, you know, buy on one computer and share amongst friends? Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, of all the things going on with Williams right now, like, yeah, there was a PR safety car this weekend for them, for sure. But, like, Excel. Like, I think bar low. The bar's low, and they are not last in the Constructors' Championship right now. This is our first yellow sector notes this week that I'm doing since the season started, which means I had to reorder all of them to the new constructor standings, and Williams is not last.
Not last.
That's when I learned that people get very upset when there's no like happily ever after ending to like these romance. Interesting. Novels. So
No, I never really thought about it too much. Speaking of romance novels, Lando was on Chicken Shop Date, and that's crazy.
I'm going to cut out our entire conversation and just start the segment right there.
And
so
that's
everyone can figure out what we were talking about beforehand.
Drop your favorite romance novels in the comments below.
Well, so it was, give me something good to read because I'm almost done with the one I'm reading right now.
If you have not heard, wow, look at me providing context before diving into a topic of conversation. If you have not heard of the online series Chicken Shop Date, it is an online creator, Amelia, who interviews different celebrities. They're usually like music performers, actors, anything in the world. And they go and have chicken nuggets. And it's like a very dry satirical date. Like that is that she, you know, they talk about their types. They talk about things. It's very funny. It's very silly. And there was teasings on the internet that, you know, it could have been Lando. Questions about, you know, have you ever gotten a traffic ticket? Do you like to play golf? And it was like, these could be an F1 driver that sound like Lando Norris. And it was an F1 driver in a very public online internet show.
Yeah. I think it's important that this, to put in the context, that this is a huge thing right now in particularly American pop culture. So it's another step of F1 being ingrained in F1 culture, because normally Amelia gets like the big guests. She gets the movie stars on the press tour for like Dune. She gets the big artists.
She just finished covering like the red carpet at the Oscars, and she, you know, did lunch with Billie Eilish and Phineas and did their high tea and things. And she's gone on a date with Jennifer Lawrence, you know, Paul Mescal, like most recently. It's big names. It's cool stuff. It's a great concept. And it is a predominantly like female watched online show. And it makes so much sense for Lando to have been a driver selected for this. And, you know, then you got to see some like continued hysterical interaction between Amelia and Lando, like through the race weekend after the podium and stuff. But it just is not a surprise to me that of all of the F1 drivers that, you know, end up on Chicken Shop Date first, it's a McLaren driver.
Well, yeah. Yeah. 100%. Because McLaren's marketing and PR team has proven itself to be a massive juggernaut in the space. It is insane what they do, with their drivers. If you drive for McLaren, they can't guarantee a super fast car. You might not win a world championship. You might not even win any races, but boy, will you get media and press for their team. They do such a good job. Because I think part of the setup that you and I were doing about how big of a deal Chicken Shop Date is and the type of guests they get, where I completely understand why McLaren and Lando's team would want Lando on Chicken Shop. But what is shocking to me is that F1 is a big enough deal that Amelia and the Chicken Shop team care to have Lando on. Because really, the name in the public zeitgeist when it comes to F1 is Lewis Hamilton. Amelia had a whole birthday cake of like all her favorite athletes and celebrities, and Lewis Hamilton was there, and notably he's the only F1 driver there. So, and you would normally think that the only F1 driver with a big enough profile in the US to go on something like Chicken Shop Date would traditionally be Lewis. So it's like such a win for McLaren to get Lando on there. Like, McLaren and Lando got more out of this than Chicken Shop Date did, for sure. Is what I'm trying to put together in lots of words here. That was not the most succinct way I could say that.
And everyone, like, no one get up in arms about, you know, like, Amelia's from the UK and Chicken Shop UK concept. Yeah, but, like, it's blowing up in the US pop culture zeitgeist right now. So McLaren is definitely, like, high-fiving themselves for this. It's a huge catch. It's a perfect lineup. It's a perfect pairing. And, you know, Lando has, like, the personality and vibes that you would want on Chicken Shop Date, of playing to the bit and everything like that. So I would love to see Lewis on one day. I think he would also do a fantastic, really good job. But the demo's right there. It's a perfect marketing matchup, lineup. And everyone, all parties involved, knew exactly what they were doing.
Nicole and Brianna are venturing into the wild, ready to get muddy, figuring out what the FIA zebras are currently up to.
I love props. I love props. And
this is
putting double hats, hatception. Woo!
Yeah, I'm not taking my hair down for this.
And I'm not gonna take out my hair clip. So double hat.
This is reminding
more than
me that
double DNFs.
Yeah, we need to order the props for the prediction segment.
Oh my god, I totally forgot we do.
Yeah,
especially because that's like my fave.
All right, I'm going to be very vulnerable and honest here with everyone listening to Gridwalk. The amount of reading I had to do to parse out the details behind Alonso's penalty here is absolutely absurd. And I read telemetry and look at all of these things often. And what I realized is everyone's resistance to use the phrase brake check means that it took a while for me to realize that they were just accusing Alonso of a very fancy brake check and therefore gave him a penalty for that. And I'm sure there's 7 million reasons why they didn't use the phrase and all of this, but I'm going to be vulnerable. At the time of recording, we record on Tuesdays, you all get this on Thursday, I feel only 80% confident that I fully understand what happened with Alonso and George Russell and the penalty.
Yeah, very relatable. I also felt like I was relatively reading a different language, and I'm like, it sounds like a brake check, but is that just not official enough language to use?
Sounds like a brake check, looks like a brake check, but is it a brake check?
Yeah, it was one of those moments where I felt like I was like, my brain's just not like, there's something that I'm missing here, but it was purposefully complicatedly worded so that you didn't fully understand it. But I
feel like I'm at a weird impasse because we've talked a lot about how personally, don't trust anything that happens with the FIA right now. Like, they have lost all credibility to me at this point. I also don't really trust what Fernando Alonso says, particularly when he's defending himself against a penalty. So I'm at this, like, rock and hard place where normally we would sit here and we'd be like, the FIA was wrong, or no, Fernando Alonso is wrong, and I don't know who to believe or what to believe, and I'm just like,
We're looking for the truth. We're looking for the truth, but we
Why is no one calling a brake check a brake check? What am I missing?
I don't know. We're missing something, clearly. Also, we both had him best P7. We were so close. So close.
So, did you land? Okay, let me roll back here for a second. Do you think it was a brake check? And yes. If it was, why is everyone so resistant to use that phrasing?
I wish, I don't know. I think, first off, I think people, the phrasing of things varies based on what drivers commit different things. There's no consistency on things. So I sometimes, for some reason, feel like that if maybe it was a different driver that this could have happened to, they'd be more like willing to say, so-and-so brake checked George, whatever. But I just,
which goes back to our inability to actually trust the FIA.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's great that the FIA investigated telemetry data. Why do they have to release the most confusing statement of all time?
But all of their statements are always unbelievably confusing. I feel like most of the time when you go back to these other Into the Wild segments where we're discussing like different statements that have been released, there's like words that automatically contradict each other within the same sentence. And that's the FIA. Like it's, you know, and I think to your point of you need to take any driver's side of complaining about a penalty with a grain of salt, like no matter who it is. So Right. You... it's hard to take a driver's like word for it when it's like this type of scenario. And also we just don't trust the FIA. So it's all just gross all around. I think everyone's wrong. Maybe.
Right.
I guess.
I find it interesting that Aston Martin isn't appealing it. And they basically released a statement like that sort of kind of says they don't agree, but then also was like, but we're going to accept the result. And Aston Martin is incredibly litigious with the FIA. When was the last time they actually just, which makes me think that no matter how you describe it, they think what Alonso did was wrong.
Aston Martin thinks Alonso did a brake check.
Yes. Or whatever, you know.
Or whatever it
invalid
is.
Invalid move that lots of people on social media thinks is just good hard racing. And I'm just like, I do think that the FIA, so like just narrowing in on one thing, the FIA does have a problem where they punish the results over, they have a credibility problem where they punish results more than they punish bad behavior. So if someone makes a bad move in a turn, but it doesn't affect the driver behind them, according to the whatever the FIA is feeling in that moment, they won't punish it. But then you'll see the same move results in a crash and then they'll punish it. So I completely understand the knee-jerk reaction of many people to be like, well, he only got this big penalty because George crashed. So I guess that was just a lengthy way of me saying, like, I completely understand anyone whose knee-jerk reaction is to say the FIA is doing this incorrectly.
Yeah, it's one of the other issues that isn't a secret is the lack of consistency on, you know, policing and refereeing and, you know, so basically inconsistencies of doing their job and whether that is, you know, based on different penalties or, you know, whatever consequences are. And it shouldn't always have to be that some, not catastrophe, but like some huge event had to occur for then there to be a consequence. Like, it's like, what if we just follow what action, like just with the action. And Right. You just don't do those things, rules. Period.
Consistent following of their own rules. It's not something I see in our future.
Nope, definitely not.
But I do, like, so that's why, like, I do think that's a more interesting angle of all of this. Like, whether or not the difference between Fernando Alonso getting the penalty or not getting the penalty is 2 points for Aston Martin. And while I understand that Fernando Alonso is going to care how high he finishes up on the Drivers' Championship, the reality is they're not fighting for a championship or even a top three in the championship positions. So what really matters is the points to the team. And they lost 2 points because of this, which seems like a pretty light punishment for if we are to believe what happened is what happened. It seemed like, and this is some sort of dangerous driving, brake checking situation, that's a pretty light punishment in the reality of things.
I mean, could be why it's all worded so confusingly. Because if that is what happened, and then that was said consequence, and that was the penalty punishment put in place of, you know, that entire action,
we would all be up in arms. We would be like,
super ew.
Right. So it's, yeah, it, the whole situation brought to light how much the collective F1 space doesn't trust their referees right now. Because I think even Fernando Alonso fans would point and say, yeah, we're fans, because he's kind of a dirty little and that's like who he is.
Right.
But everyone across the board was just like, are we sure FIA?
Are we sure?
This is this? You sure? And everyone was pointing at a bunch of different times when they didn't penalize the same thing. And it's just,
as with every time there's some like major penalty that comes out, it's like, well, here's all of these examples of other instances where it happened where they didn't do anything.
So we have one more thing to discuss when it comes to our referees. And George did have a crash. A really, really bad crash.
I really can't unhear the audio. Like, it's really so scary.
It's so scary. And you and I are not George's biggest fans, but I think you have, like, we neither of us are at a skeptical point where we feel like none of that was genuine. Like, I don't think he's sitting in a car sideways on a racetrack thinking, oh, you know what would be better for me is if we red flag this race. Like, I...
Yeah. No, that's definitely not... It is such an instinctual reaction. The fact that anyone thinks that in that moment, an emotional state, like that, no, you're literally in the middle of the track. And then, you know, you, if you watch like Nico's on board and Lance is on board and they're like, you know, people are getting warnings and they're given plenty of time. Things. George doesn't know that. George has no idea. George just thinks he's in the middle of the track. And that's terrifying. That is so unbelievably scary. So no, I do not think that there was any sort of like, oh, this will be a great opportunity. I think it's very much, I am in a car that is in the middle of a track of other cars going hundreds of miles per hour and I could die.
Right. In the fastest part of the track, on the last lap of the race, he doesn't know if the cars coming behind are coasting to the finish line or if they're actually racing or what's going on. I think this is a good time to remind everyone and then ask for F1 to change the fact that the marshals around every racetrack for F1 are all volunteers. F1 does not have a professional safety and marshal crew that just follows them around the world. And I will point out there are other race series that do this a lot better. And so I will point one out in that IndyCar has a very professional safety crew that goes to every single race with IndyCar. And you'll see that when a big crash like this happens, or if a car is ever in the way of a racetrack, IndyCar automatically makes everything what they call a full course yellow. But essentially it's F1's yellow flag, except for the entire racetrack. So that means no matter where anyone else is, they don't have to be just two corners away from George Russell. They all have to slow down. So that gives all the race cars and the teams time to alert everyone before they get to that point in the track. And within like 10 seconds, like professional safety marshals are with the driver who crashed. Like the amount of time that George Russell had to sit there as fast cars drove by him in like a small section of the racetrack that was yellow was so terrifying for me to watch. And then to have like two people who are volunteers, they're doing their best, but are not professional safety people who do this for a living and get paid to do it, like go up to George and like help him out of the car. It was just such a reminder to me that like F1 needs to be paying professionals to do this.
So incredibly unserious. That's, I saw a lot of that discourse online as well. Just like IndyCar can do this. And that makes, if you're supposed to be one of the like, pinnacles of motorsports,
right?
I feel like a safety crew that goes with you to all of the races of the very dangerous driving, like, doesn't sound so outlandish. It's, I'm sure there'd be plenty of people that would be shocked to find out that that doesn't exist already.
I'm sure that so many people found out because of all the discourse online right now that that wasn't the case. I'm sure most people think that, like, all these marshals around the track are just paid. But it's like, no, I could, like, sign up to do it in Vegas with zero training. They'll give me, like, a CPR training. Like, it's not...
No, no, and that's not what you need with the risks that are in the sport.
It's the final lap hitting every F1 garage. Get ready for this week's Yellow Sector Notes.
Welcome back to Yellow Sector Notes. For the first time in a long time, So pay attention, because we do this in the order of the Constructors Championship. So we have a new order, which really just made me sad, having to move Mercedes. But starting with F1, tickets are now on sale for the Boston F1 Arcade, so we have an official opening date. And this news is pretty outdated now, but we haven't done any formal Yellow Sector notes since this was announced. But both Ford and Pepe Jeans announced that they're sponsoring a Red Bull Racing F1 Academy driver. That is a mouthful that I wrote down there. So they're getting put on the liveries, and one of the Red Bull liveries has actually been completely transformed to a Ford livery. So it's very cool that they're getting that investment. Moving on to officially Red Bull, though, there's still no update on the sexual assault investigation to Christian Horner, as we touched on at the start of the show, and therefore, I don't want to report on anything exciting or interesting happening in the Red Bull Corporation. So please take sexual harassment seriously, and like always, I really hope the victim is safe and surrounded by as much support as possible right now. Moving on to teams that are not dealing with a sexual harassment case at the moment, Dude Perfect made content with Ferrari this weekend. Zak Brown was extended at McLaren through 2030 as their CEO. Aston Martin posted a bunch in support of both Jessica Hawkins and the Pride Hub that was at the Australia GP this weekend. The Pride Hub was a first-of-its-kind area at a race weekend that was set up by Racing Pride. Toto Wolff has announced that one of the races he won't be attending this year is the Japanese GP, which is the next upcoming GP. Red Bull Jr. is the first of the teams to announce that one of their FP1s is going to go to a rookie driver. It's going to Iwasa. I'm really happy for Haas. Scoring double points is a big deal for a back-of-the-grid team, but I have no other note for them this week. So, Haas, please, like, if you're going to keep scoring points and be higher up in the Yellow Sector notes, like, do something exciting, please. Or interesting, or, I don't know, let me know. Get back to me next week. Williams announced their complete list of fan zones for this year. They had one in Australia last week, and they have one upcoming in Japan in 2 weeks. So definitely check out their complete list of locations that are on the screen right now. Valtteri Bottas, we didn't talk about last week because there was no Yellow Sector notes, but starred in an incredible Uber Australia ad. If you still haven't seen it, go check it out. And lastly, and definitely least, is Alpine. And right now their Yellow Sector note is they're still P10, and I refuse to blame the plastic bag in Esteban Ocon's car for that. I think they were always going to still remain at P10. Well, that is the gridwalk for March 28th, 2024 completed. How was my sector time today, Nicole?
Faster than Mercedes will be at any point this season.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Gridwalk. Thank you to our co-creators, Nicole Katz and Brianna Klein. Thank you to our four-legged executive producers and me, VoiceOver Man. Don't forget to subscribe, like the video, turn on auto downloads, and leave a review to provide us with a fresh set of tires for the next week's show. You can follow us on social media at Gridwalk Show for daily content. We will be back to walk the Formula One grid every Thursday, and we will see you for the post-Gridwalk debrief in the comments.
Today felt like a grid convincing itself that Ferrari may be back and not a grid walk.